Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin, Broadcasting Discovery Institute, Center for Science and Culture. We have with us on the show today, once again, Dennis Wagner and Kevin Wirth from the Access Research Network, a wonderful website with tons and tons of resources on intelligent design, including a very significant and extensive online bookstore for buying ID books and videos, as well as a very useful storehouse of articles on intelligent design. Mr. Wagner and Mr. Wirth have been involved with the intelligent design movement for many years, and their website, www.arn.org, is really one of the oldest intelligent design websites on the internet, as well as one of the most extensive. And we had a podcast with them previously on this show, because every year, at the end of the year, Access Research Network comes out with a list of the top 10 news stories or top 10 events in the debate over evolution and intelligent design that took place during the previous year. And we wanted to have Dennis and Kevin on the show with us to help explain to our listeners at the ID of the Future podcast about what these stories were. I really enjoyed reading about some of these stories on ARN's wonderful blog that covers a lot of science stories, written by David Tyler, who really does a great job of reviewing the scientific literature. But could you guys tell our listeners some of the highlights of these Darwinian fairy tales that were refuted in 2007?
Yeah, sure, Casey. This is Kevin. I'll just touch on a couple of them. The human appendix is one thing that Darwinians like to talk about. Evolution is from Charles Darwin way back in the 1870s to Ernst Mayr in recent years have described the human appendix as a leftover vestige of the evolutionary process. But a recent study in the Journal of Theoretical Biology, scientists are starting to understand the appendix as a, quote, safe house, unquote, for bacteria that can be used to reboot our digestive system when the bacteria in our intestines die or are purged. So this indicates a more useful function than was previously known or understood. And then another point was the 1% lie. A lot of times we've been told over the years, like for a long time, maybe 30 years or so, that the scientific evidence reveals that there's only a 1% difference between human and chimpanzee genetics. But researchers are now finding that on top of that 1% distinction, that chunks of missing DNA, extra genes, altered connections in gene networks, and the very structure of chromosomes confounding any quantification of humanness versus chimpness. In the December 2006 issue of PLOS 1, Han and co-workers reported that human and chimpanzee gene copy numbers differ by a whopping 6.4%.
You know, I have heard the same statistics as I'm sure you guys have for many years. And even in the recent PBS Nova documentary Judgment Day, Intelligent Design, they basically made this exact argument that humans and chimps are only 1% different. Therefore, we should accept this claim that humans and chimps share a common ancestor. And not only is it just a bad argument logically, I mean, similarity does not necessarily mean that things are related through common ancestry. You could have similarity as a result of common design, but the very statistic they were citing was incorrect. And it just is very astounding to realize that the more that we learn about the function of biology and genetics, the more Darwinian fairy tales seem to be dropping like flies. Now, I understand that some top 10 stories of 2007 dealt with scientists who have experienced persecution because they questioned evolution or they supported intelligent design. What are some of the stories that you guys chose on this front?
Well, I think the biggest one was the one with the astronomer Guillermo Gonzalez at Iowa State University. His work has been featured in several ID books and DVDs, and so he's well known in the ID community. And he was denied tenure at Iowa State this year, and even though his publishing record was better than many, and his papers are often cited in scientific literature. So there really wasn't a basis for that, but the university claimed that it wasn't because of his belief in intelligent design. And then, lo and behold, a reporter uncovered an email between staff at the university where it became obvious that not only was his tenure denied because of his belief in ID, but that this was something that was going on behind the scenes even before he came up for tenure, and so that people working behind the scenes to try to make sure that he was denied his tenure in the university. We think this is just a travesty when we live in a country of many kind of freedoms, but academic freedom is one that we tout. where we're free to pursue the truth wherever it leads, but it appears that at some institutions, this isn't the case. Robert Marks down at Baylor University was another similar case where he had an evolutionary informatics lab and website down there. When they found out that he was investigating issues related to intelligent design, the administration there shut down his lab and website. So these are just two of many stories like this. And in fact, these two stories are going to be featured in an upcoming movie this spring called Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. And I would really encourage people to go to the theaters and see firsthand the kind of discrimination that's going on against scientists in our country, because they think that alternatives to Darwinism should be explored.
Yeah, and if I could kind of jump in and just add a little asterisk to what Dennis said, Casey, I think that this is a huge issue, and I suspect that this whole story about this kind of persecution and discrimination is going to turn up big time in 2008. There's also going to be a book published on this topic in 2008 called Slaughter of the Dissidents. That book will document many, many case studies of different scientists and folks in academia who've been unjustly persecuted and what happened to them, you know, loss of job, loss of tenure, denial of degree, et cetera, et cetera.
I completely agree with you guys. This is a real big story. And of course, listeners to the ID the Future podcast have heard a lot about a couple of these stories over the last year. But as far as, you know, unfortunate incidents in the debate over intelligence and evolution, but nonetheless, very significant ones, you're absolutely right. This belongs in your top 10. And I really hope, as I'm sure you guys would feel the same way, that in 2008, maybe we will see a drop in the number of instances of persecution, and maybe some of the publicity that's going to come, especially from this nationwide movie Expelled, will help to expose what's going on and help to push for a drop in this sort of persecution. What about on the political front? What were some of the political events that took place in 2007 in the debate?
Well, Casey, in February, the Kansas State Board of Education threw out a model for teaching origin science objectively, and in place of the objective standards, the board inserted a new model which allows only material or natural causes to explain the origin of natural phenomena. In Kansas, only one answer is allowed to the question, where do we come from? The answer, material causes, the random interactions of matter, energy, and other forces. So another one, Casey, was the Council of Europe, who adopted a resolution calling intelligent design a threat to human rights, quote unquote. That kind of popped up on our radar kind of suddenly last year. I was kind of surprised to see it. But they did make an effort to influence some important decision-making bodies on this issue. Another item was the UK Department of Children, Schools, and Families, who posted a statement on a government website claiming that, quote, creationism and intelligent design are not part of the national curriculum for science, end quote, and describes intelligent design as a, quote, creationist belief. Further, they said that it's sometimes erroneously advanced as scientific theory but has no underpinning scientific principles or explanations supporting it, and it is not accepted by the international scientific community.
So even though we see the evidence going in one direction, we kind of see the political efforts going in another. As the evidence continues to challenge Darwinism, we see political bodies getting more and more intense about protecting Darwinism, which is kind of a strange event. And, you know, the only thing I can really attribute that to is the fact that it's not just about science, that there's worldviews attached to these different positions, and these governmental bodies are out there to protect their particular worldview of materialism or naturalism or atheism or whatever it is that's usually attached to the Darwinian theory.
I think you guys are absolutely right that there's more going on than just the science, and it's so interesting to see the European Darwinists are behaving just like the American Darwinists. The stronger the evidence gets against Darwinism, the more and more they have to basically, in the case of the Council of Europe, recommend criminalizing dissent from evolution. I mean, this is like we're going back to the Inquisition here in Europe, where if you disagree with the authorities, you are being accused of promoting a threat to human rights, mere disagreement from evolution or supporting intelligent design. I mean, this is absolutely incredible and both scary at the same time. Now, let's turn to one last item that I see. You talked about how this is about Darwin and design, but not Darwin versus design. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, I think for a long time this debate has been, you know, kind of two extreme camps, you know, those that believe in Darwinism, those that believe in design. And So we have a lot of shouting that's going on, but no progress being made on as far as what's the evidence actually say. And two of the books that came out, The Edge of Evolution that we talked about, and also Mike Jean's The Design Matrix, you know, what these guys are encouraging us to do is say, well, let's step back and look at what the evidence actually says. And does the Darwin's principles actually explain anything in nature? The answer is yes. It explains small variations, adaptations to environments and those kinds of things. So to say that evolution is a lie is overstating the case, because evolution is something that's observable in the laboratory. However, it does have limits. It can only do so much. And trying to discover exactly what it can and can't do, that's the challenge we have before us. In this coming year, I think the debate's going to move more towards what can Darwinian principles actually explain and what is best explained by the principles of design, because each of them have something to offer when we come to look at biological systems. Just straight design by itself doesn't appear to be what happened. Life, it does have the ability to adapt to its environment, but small random changes don't make designed systems. That's what we're seeing. So there's this. It's the debate's kind of turned to Darwin and design, not Darwin versus design. And the real scientific challenge ahead of us is to determine the limits of each.
Well, these are some very, very enlightening and interesting stories. I just want to remind our listeners that Dennis Wagner and Kevin Wirth are with the Access Research Network. The website is www.arn.org. Strongly encourage you to go check it out. It's a wonderful website that has a huge online storehouse of pro-intelligent design books and videos and other materials, as well as articles. So thank you both, Dennis and Kevin, for being on our show with us today.
Thank you, Casey.
Appreciate it, Casey.
Well, I wish you guys the best in 2008, and I look forward to doing the same interview a year from now, and hopefully we'll have some more exciting scientific stories to talk about and fewer persecution stories. How does that sound?
That sounds to be a great goal.
Yeah, okay. It would.
Okay, well, thank you very much. This is Casey Leskin with the ID the Future podcast. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Bennett. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.